KFI AM 640, Sunday morning with Elizabeth Espinosa. Don't forget to hit me up on Twitter at @E_Espinosa, Instagram at Elizabeth Espinosa. Remember, it's Espinosa. I'd love to hear from you, see what your thoughts and questions are for our guests. And speaking of guests, we had an incredible setup here with Peter Gadzik, who is an author. He has a memoir, True Story of 6 Years and a Very Bizarre Form of Conversion Therapy, that basically attempted to cure him of homosexuality. And unfortunately, we had technical problems, so we couldn't get through to him, but we have him now. And I'm incredibly thrilled and so thankful that he's willing to come back here on KFI with us. The memoir is The Inheritance of Shame. Peter, welcome. Good morning. And how are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you, Elizabeth, so much.
And I am pronouncing your last name right, or no?
No, but that's okay. It's Gajdic.
Oh, no wonder you're like, whatever, what's this lady saying? Okay, no, Gajdic.
Yeah, like a guy in a ditch.
Oh, Gajdic. Okay, and that's what, Hungarian, Polish, your last name?
It's Hungarian, yes.
Very nice. My mother was married to a Hungarian, her first marriage, go figure. So tell me something. You know, we've heard a lot about this gay conversion therapy, very controversial. Of course, thankfully, it's been banned here in California. And it's hard to believe that there are those who believe that they can cure you of your homosexuality. So what was that like for you? Walk us through, please.
Yes, it is bizarre from the outside. But you know what I'll say about my experience, and I think it's true for any type of these therapies, is they all begin with a particular lie. They all start with the same lie. And if you believe that lie, there's an internal logic that carries you along. And the lie, of course, is just basically that being gay, homosexuality, same-sex desires, is a sin, it's immoral, it's a deviation, it's something that needs to be cured, fixed. You need to reclaim your dormant heterosexuality.
So where?
And believe the lie.
Right. But let me ask you this. How old were you when you came out to your parents?
I was 23 when I came out to my parents.
Who did you come out to, mom or dad first, or both?
Mom and dad, same time.
Okay. And what did they say to you right then and there?
Well, it was terrible. I was raised Catholic. So of course their response was
a lot of guilt.
And I'm sorry?
You said Catholic, and I said a lot of guilt. There's a lot of guilt there.
A lot of guilt. I remember growing up with priests chastising, you know, homosexuals on the pulpit, and it was, it was a terrible situation when I came out to them, and it basically just amounted in a lot of fights and arguments and silencing, which had been the history of my life and the family. And after a short time, I left my hometown, like a lot of gay people, I think, young people, just to escape the situation. But I was even more depressed and isolated, so I was referred, my doctor referred me to a psychiatrist in BC, where I live in Canada. Psychiatry is covered under our medical plan, so it was free for me.
Nice.
And I needed to see somebody, to talk to somebody. I mean, I didn't know why or what I needed, but I was so depressed and suicidal. So I went to this psychiatrist, and he basically said, yes, he can help me. He can help me out of my depression. And that's all it took. That's all it took. And to make somewhat of a long story very short, very soon, the cure to my suffering was to silence my homosexuality so that I could reclaim my dormant heterosexuality. And I believed this lie. I believed it primarily because I had been sexually abused as a child, and I'd always feared growing up that the sexual abuse had created or
that desire,
my homosexuality.
Interesting.
And that was very prevalent in the 1970s when I grew up. I mean, that was sort of the common understanding, certainly in the church. And the doctor reinforced that. He said, yes, this is true. That's why you're this way. And so his treatment for me, and all conversion therapies are different in how they enact these cures, but his was a lot of medication. Of course, it started slow. So we're talking sedative, ultimately four different antidepressants concurrently.
And you're 20 and years old?
When the dose, pardon me?
And how old are you right now?
So I was 24 when I met him.
Okay.
And by the time I was, 25, he had actually told me I needed to move into what he called a therapeutic house, because my treatment would be so exhaustive and extreme. So I did.
I want to highlight here, forgive me, Peter, I'm going to be interjecting here because this is crazy. I mean, I'm reading part of your memoir here, and it you talk about your treatment had devolved into like these intense primal scream therapies.
Yes.
I want you to explain that, and also weekly injections of ketamine. That's basically the drug used to calm a horse. It's crazy.
Yes, yes. So his therapy was primal therapy. And primal therapy basically was created in the late 60s, early 70s by a LA-based therapist, Arthur Janoff, which basically says that all neuroses or trauma can be healed or cured by these intense primal sessions. So a lot of screaming and pounding on a mattress and batting with a baseball bat against a bag. So this is what the doctor practiced. But for me, he reinforced this idea that it was my suppression of anger that had led to my homosexuality. So I needed to release my rage. Yes, and I can just see the eyes rolling. It's like, this is so bizarre. But, I was 24, and I was desperate for relief.
And this is a doctor. This is somebody who went to medical school.
Yeah, he's a psychiatrist.
Right, a psychiatrist. So you look at them with respect, and you think they're an expert, and therefore that's why you go to them, for help.
Yeah, I mean, licensed psychiatrist. We're not talking some wacko from the street. He had a practice, licensed by the province. So the primal therapy continued as well as he was giving me these drugs. The ketamine started. I mean, I should preface and say there was never any consent. There were never forms signed, and that was part of my lawsuit when I eventually sued him. The ketamine, the first time I was injected was unannounced. And once I understood, once he explained it to me after the fact, it was he needed to bond with his patients in order to enact this healing process.
So Peter,
he injected us with ketamine.
It's just scary listening to this. I know that he had you do unpaid servitude and some other really bizarre behavior patterns. When we come back, if you don't mind, I want you to share with our audience, our listeners, just how twisted this whole thing was and how you really are a survivor. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us. We'll be right back with Peter Gajdic, the author of The Inheritance of Shame, a memoir. Sunday morning with Elizabeth Spinoza, KFI AM 640, into the newsroom with the very latest. Rocio. KFI AM 640, Sunday morning with Elizabeth Espinosa. Having an incredible conversation here about a bizarre form. And if you ask me, I think they're all bizarre forms of anything that is called conversion therapy if you're gay. So, there's such a thing that some people believe that if you're gay, you can be cured by this conversion therapy stuff, which is, I don't think it's scientific at all. And so there is a very courageous man, Peter Gajdic, out of Canada, who suffered 6 years, if not more, of this type of awful torture treatments, alleged treatment. The book is The Inheritance of Shame, a memoir. And Peter, thank you for sharing your story and being courageous. You talked initially about how you went through, the awful experience as it was to explain to your parents, look, I'm gay. You were 20 and grew up in a strong Catholic household. They didn't exactly take to that. And you end up at 24, you said, in this primal
24.
Okay. This crazy doctor who was a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, licensed and all, but he started giving you weekly injections of ketamine, which is a horse anesthetic.
Yes.
And what happened?
Well, that continued for the next few years, as well as all these other drugs I mentioned. And then on top of that, he had an antipsychotic because I overdosed. I mean, I just got carried along with what he told me to do. And at that point, you have no rational thought. I mean,
right.
I was on so much medication and doing primal therapy daily and living in this therapeutic house.
Please explain primal therapy for our listeners and also this therapeutic home. What are these things you're talking about?
So primal therapy, it's this belief started in the late 60s that these intense primal sessions, so you're on your back on a mattress and you're writhing and crying and you're reliving past trauma. You're talking your way through whatever event you remember and you're sobbing. And then if you get angry, you sit up and you grab a baseball bat and you start pounding a mattress with the baseball bat and screaming at your parents. And it continued. I mean, this is what I did for 6 years. But the focus of my primal therapy, as directed by this therapist, was that it was my the childhood sexual abuse that had caused my homosexuality.
No, you were abused as a child. That's right. And who abused you, if you don't mind asking?
It was a stranger. It was
okay.
A stranger. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So all this rage and pain, reliving it was so that I could reconnect, so that I could, my heterosexuality would resurface once again. And I believed it as I went along. And it wasn't until the medication dosages started lowering and my mind, and so we're talking now 5.5 years into this, that my mind started clearing and I realized slowly that it's like, oh my God, nothing has changed. Mm. And it was so unbelievable to me. I mean, numb. I mean, you're at that point, I'm just numb. And I was still on drugs, so I was under their influence as well. But yeah, it lasted 6 years. I was in this 6 years. And the house, he told me, well, you'll never be able to do my therapy unless you live in a house with other patients. And so again,
what did your parents say?
Oh, I cut off all contact with everyone, and that was absolutely part of the plan. None of his patients were allowed to have contact with past friends, with family members. We weren't allowed to watch TV, read newspapers, read books, nothing. And eventually he told us we have to cook his meals and deliver them to his home. And I mean, we were cleaning his house. It just went on.
Wow. That's just unpaid servitude. But it's crazy how you're,
yeah.
When you're in it, you don't have any perspective. Like you're so
no.
desperate for help. You're so desperate for an answer. And you so wanted to be straight. It wasn't as if, you know, you chose to be gay. It's an innate desire. And so here you are trying to appease everybody else, and you're killing yourself, really.
I think the important thing is I wanted to not be in pain. It's not that I didn't. It's not that I wanted to be straight, although that's where it took me. And I think that's where it takes a lot of people. But really, and this is only something I've come to understand through, I mean, I'm 52 now. These things happened in my 20s and early 30s. I wanted to not be in pain.
Why were you in pain, though?
Why? Well, please, growing up in the 70s, Catholic, gay, homosexuality had only been decriminalized in my youth and declassified as a mental illness. This is the world in which I was living and people of my generation were living. I grew up believing and being told from many sources that, yes, sexual abuse makes a person gay. Gays are pedophiles. And I know things have changed a lot today, but I think that there's still, if you scratch the surface, I think there's still this idea out there that, homosexuality, there's some deviation there, it's not quite normal. So it's caused an enormous pain.
But that's what I'm saying. You know, the pain came, though, right, from the fact that people made you feel bad. They criminalized you.
Yeah.
And so it was, and it's like saying, oh, you have blue eyes. You're the devil. And you're like, what did I have to do with it? I didn't ask for blue eyes. I was born this way, right?
Yeah. I mean, instead of understanding that it wasn't my homosexuality that it caused me pain, but rather other people's opinions about my sexuality that it caused me pain. Without that understanding, you're just in pain. You're just depressed. You're just isolated. It's just darkness.
How do you feel today?
And you just want to feel better, you know?
I mean, how do you process that? Because I'm sure there are moments where it's got to resurface.
You mean the anger over what happened to me?
Yes.
Yes. Well, it took years. I mean, when I left the therapy, I mean, I was numb for the first 2 years. It was worse than when I went into the therapy. It was different, but it was worse. I mean, I feared the doctor because, you know, he would scream at us. I mean, threaten us. I mean, he seemed to know exactly what I was most afraid of. You know, saying if I left his therapy, I would just get AIDS and die. That's it. I would just get AIDS and die. Yeah. And that was my greatest fear. I mean, I came of age during the AIDS rise, right? So it took me a few years. And then, and also to get off the medications and to, you know, they're very toxic at that level, right? So, and I was very angry over what had happened.
Understandable, Peter, and rightfully so. Now, listen, we're up against the clock. We're out of time, but I want to tell everyone if you want, and maybe you have someone in your life that you're still trying to understand, your child maybe had just came out to you, pick up this book. I mean, maybe it'll help you understand that, you know, people don't choose these things. It happens. You know, my father, Peter, was fraternal twin, and my uncle was gay. And and my dad's 71, so you imagine that era, growing up and in Mexico. So very Catholic. And, he went through quite a bit as well. So I feel you. I really do. Thank you so much. Please pick up the book, Peter Gajdic, author of The Inheritance of Shame, a memoir, an incredible memoir of courage. And again, God bless you, Peter. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been Sunday Morning with Elizabeth Espinosa on KFI. Rocio Rivera, what you got going on in the newsroom?